Yeah, in Parak Daled.
Started already?
Oh, yes. We are in Parak Daled. We are just at the beginning of the Parak. And Mordechai found out about what's going on. And Mordechai Yadat Kol Asher Naseh. We had done a midrash about the heavenly goings-on with regards to Haman's pur that he cast, his lot that he cast. And the end of that midrash, we didn't do the very end of it. The very end of it has the heavenly bodies telling Mordechai essentially what was going on. So that's the midrash's version of how Mordechai knew. But we're starting our parak with somehow Mordechai knew what had been decided with the gezerah. Vayikra Mordechai begadav, vayibash sak of ether, vayitzi betucha ir, vayizak zaka gedulah umara. So we have Mordechai's reaction to this gezerah, his very intense reaction, and his immediate reaction is our pasuk, but the midrash I sent out. If you want to come regularly, we have a WhatsApp group where I post source sheets beforehand. It's really just photocopies of like the pages that we're doing. And the first midrash that I sent out is actually in the middle of the midrash, and it tells us a little background that many people have heard part of, and it's nice to like do it inside to see what the midrash is actually saying, not just the way people tell it over. So the midrash says, this is the first page I sent out. Reish Laman says in front of midrash Rabbah. This is a famous midrash where first Haman goes out after they stamped the zeros as final, and he went out happy with his chavra, and they came upon Mordechai. And Mordechai was walking ahead of them, and Mordechai saw three young children who were coming from school. Ras Mordechai achareihem. So Mordechai sees these kids, he starts running after them. Haman and his friends are like, what's going on? Why is Mordechai running? They want to go see what Mordechai is going to say to them, what he's going to ask them. When he got there, he asked them, tell me what pasuk you're learning in school. And keep in mind, when we're doing saying this, that we also briefly spoke about how Mordechai had a kind of a sensitivity towards Hashgacha Pratis, where we learned previously that there are different opinions about what Mordechai's reaction was when Esther was given special treatment at the palace when she was taken in the contest. And one opinion said that he dafka thought it was a sign, because she was getting special treatment, he thought it was a sign that Hashem wanted her to be taken, and he tried to play into that version of reality. Whereas a different opinion we learned said that he didn't necessarily know this, but that he was worried about that because on a simple level, why would he want Esther to be taken? So he tried to work against that process of reality that was happening. And so we see that Mordechai kind of, he had his kavana in what he thought was right. He tried to work with it, but maybe he had his eye out towards what Hashem was trying to make happen also and try to kind of work with that. So here he is asking these kids, what pasuk are you learning in school? Right? Some of us who may have heard the Midrash may already be familiar with the kind of nevuah overtones that these psukim are supposed to have. Maybe he was looking for a sign from Hashem, trying to see what would come up from these children. The children.
Thank you. Okay.
So the first one says as follows, Mishle Gimel. From Mishle, this child says, don't be afraid of sudden terror or of darkness when the wicked people come. This is interesting altogether that little children are learning Mishle and Yeshaya. I know all these kids were. That someone may plan their plots and they're going to be foiled. They're not going to be established because Hashem is with us. Also from Yeshaya, where Hashem is saying, this is about Hashem himself, this pasuk. Hashem is saying, I'm going to be the same Hashem until old age, and I'm going to be able to sustain with both whatever goes on. I made things, and I carry things, I sustain things, like on me. Hashem can handle anything, basically, and rescue people. And we daven and think of these three psukim together because we put it together in davening, but really they're completely different psukim. But Kevan Shishma, Mordechai Kach, Tachak. Mordechai heard this and he laughed. Imagine right after this bad gazer went out, Mordechai hears the Sukkim and he's laughing. Amar lo Haman, mahi zora simchas v'simach v'lo divretin ekor halalu. He's like, what are you laughing about? Amar al b'sarot tavot shadish runi. Already he hears the good news. This is enough for him to know that things are on the right path, in the right direction, and he's laughing. Shalos chad min aitza ra'ashi asa aleinu, miyad kal kaman arashi v'amar, ina nishalech yadit tchila ela b'im latinokut. He's saying, it's good news. I'm not afraid of you. I'm not afraid of your plans. Haman's mad. I don't like the end of the as well as the serving. I'm going to get these kids first, but of course we know that that's not what happened, so we don't have to worry either. And just interesting to point out that the Maharal asked, like, these are such random sukkim, like, what's the orientation of them? What's the perspective on them? What's the point? And he highlights that each pasuk is kind of speaking to someone else or from the perspective of someone else. Where the first pasuk is saying, with regards to the tzaddik, and Mordechai, who's the tzaddik here, and it's saying that the tzaddik doesn't have to worry. The tzaddik knows, al tirami pachar tidom, that if there's a sudden fear, that the tzaddik knows, or should know, that it's a gezeira, but only l'rega. Even if bad things happen, even if bad things are decreed, that they're not permanent, that they're not lasting. And this, he says, was speaking to Mordechai as a tzaddik. The second one was said with regards to a rasha. That the Russia may plan something, but from his end, it's not going to last. And the last one is kind of from Hashem's perspective, that Hashem is everlasting and Hashem can handle anything. And again, even if the Russia plans something, that Hashem can handle it and Hashem is going to overcome it, basically, and help people overcome it. So I want to, that was just kind of, it's the end of the last parak when he made the gezeirah and the poor. That's the beginning of this parak when we have the reaction to it. And I want to just revisit a little bit last time when we ended Parak Gimel and we spoke about how Haman reacted and handled, and Ahasuerus handled this gezeirah afterwards. So here we have Haman walking out all happy and pleased with himself. And we see it in the shot. It's not just randomly that the midrash says that he was sameach, but the last pasuk in Parak Gimel told us that already. They're sitting back and drinking, and everyone else was navocha, was all bewildered and confused. And if you look in the midrash again, we have an interesting perspective on this this pasuk, this yeshu l'shtot. It's in the same midrash rabba further ahead in the next part that I copied for you. Okay, Kaf Aleph, also in Zion. Okay, and it says, it starts out, also the last passage of Gimel, HaRatim Yadud B'chufim B'dvar HaMelech, HaMelech HaMan Yashvu L'shtot. They sat down to drink. Amar Rabbi Chanin, Man Z'amar Rachmana V'atran Hu. Someone might think that Hashem is Mevatar on things. Hashem doesn't care about things. He doesn't follow up on things. He doesn't hold people accountable for things. Yit Vatrun Ohi. That person's bowels should be mevatered on. In other words, wrong, not true. Aval, what is it instead? Marich ruchei v'gavei didei. That actually Hashem, rather than foregoing to hold people accountable, he just is patient. And eventually, he holds people accountable. Where do we see this? Amar lehem l'shvatim, atem mechartem et achicha mitoch machal mishteh. Anyone see where the midrash is going? He's saying, Hashem says to the shvatim, you sold your brother from eating and drinking. When did that happen? Right after they sold Yosef. What does the Chumash say? They sit down to eat. They had a meal. Huh? So also, once again, similar, the Midrash is making a parallel. Just like here, there's a bad thing that happened, and then they're just sitting back to drink. What's the big deal? So also, after the brothers sold Yosef, it was a big deal, even if they thought it was justified. They just sat down to have a meal. It's like as if it was nothing. Hashem says, Tachan yaseh lechem. I'll do the same thing to you. I'll make a bad thing decreed, and then they'll sit back and drink. Hadu dechtiv ha-melech ha-haman yashvu lishtuk. So we have, way, way back in Chumash, seemingly unrelated incidents, where really Hashem is, according to Midrash, there is a connection that, once again, we've been talking in this year about kind of literary connections in Tanakh, where things in the Psukim of the Midrash, of the Megillah, kind of hark back to other places in Tanakh and remind us of things. And this is another instance like that, where the Megillah is, according to Midrash, is hinting to that instance and trying to make a connection there. Okay, so the reaction to the ear after they sat down to drink was Navocha. They were all confused. And who is Ha'ir Shushan? What does that? What do you think that means? Who do you think that might refer to? Okay, could be just the inhabitants. What?
Who?
Who? Or why? Or are they confused about? Okay, so let's see. So the Maharal says that it was the populace. It was the regular people. It was the non-Jewish people. And he actually paints them in a positive light. He says the lay people were like, what? Did you just say you're going to destroy a whole nation? How can you do that? How could anyone say that? And they were actually afraid that they would be next. Like, this king and prime minister of his are just throwing out gezeiras against people. Like, that's terrifying. It seems like it's out of the blue to them. And they were all bewildered and confused and upset by this gezeira. On the other hand, Rashi actually says it was the Jews in Shushan who were upset, which makes sense, obviously, that they heard this and they were all upset and confused and this created an upheaval. But it's interesting, the Midrash says, in the same Midrash text that we just started, it says that not only was it the non-Jews that were all confused, but it wasn't just, sorry, the Jews that were all confused, but it wasn't just because they heard the Gezeira, it was because there's actual ramifications for their lives. That already, from the time of Gezeira, there was the beginning of an upheaval in Shushan, where the Midrash says, Ha'achad Yisrael Yotei Lashuk, Mavakesh Likach Litra, that somebody would go shopping, Basar or Agudah Shal Yarak, that they would be going shopping for their groceries, and they would come upon a Persian non-Jewish guy, and he would start trying to choke him. That, like he says, tomorrow I'm going to kill you and I'm going to take all your stuff. That this was why it was like taking everyone by surprise. They were neighbors, they thought they got along, and all of a sudden they're turning against them. Unfortunately, we've had some incidents that we can relate to. We know about in current events where this is, it's a thing that has happened, we'll pause there, that this is something that could happen, that on one, and it sounds like a contradiction, on one hand, from Mara, where the Mara says they were upset about it, the non-Jews were upset about it, and it was disturbing to them. And on the other hand, here, they were the ones that were causing the disturbing actions, which upset all the Jews. So what do we think?
I mean, there's a lot of people, because there's both.
Okay.
I mean, I feel that's not in real life.
That's what I was thinking about. In other words, it could be they just contradict each other, two different opinions. But we also see this. We have, unfortunately, current trends of anti-Semitism.
That's also really, say, more current events digested. It is happening in Germany, not the same way, but...
Right. I think in Germany, we tend to sweep the good people, quote-unquote, under the rug as like a heathen, whereas I think in more recent times, unfortunately, with anti-Semitism, both in America and in here, and things that go on, where there are, it's not like you can categorize everybody in one boat, where you have your people who are, have morals.
The problem is, people just categorize everything. Every person is, there are people on both sides for sure.
Right. Okay, so it's interesting to see how that played out, that it could be as machlokes, or it could be that there were different elements to the society, and that it affected people differently. If we go on, so going back to the Targum Daled, we're going to go and see what the Gemara has to say now about it. That Mordechai knew, it says, what happened.
It was clear that nobody was defending the Jews. Even though they were scared, they were just scared for themselves.
They were worried about it, but it doesn't seem like they did anything. Which means maybe we've made some progress in history. Right? That is a good sign. Okay. Okay, so Mordechai knew what happened. We're in Daf Tevav Amud Aleph, it's labeled 15a, in the page I sent out in the Gemara. And what does the Gemara have to say about Mordechai's reaction? My Amar. What did Mordechai actually say? He let out some sort of cry. Rav Amar, Gavah Haman Me'achashverosh. Rav says, Haman said, Haman has gotten greater than Achashverosh. Haman's will has superseded Achashverosh's will. Haman had this scheme, and we saw also previously in the Midrash that he kind of had to convince Achashverosh, actually. Achashverosh was worried about angering the Jewish people of God, and he wasn't so keen on it, and eventually Haman kept bothering him, and he convinced him. So Mordechai said this is a really bad sign if it actually went into reality that this gezeira went out, because that means that Haman is now has an upper hand and is able to convince Achashverosh. Shmuel Amar, Gavar Malka Ila'a Mimalka Tata. He says, not that Haman is greater than Achashverosh, But that Mati Ilam Mata Pata, the Mefarshim say, is a Lashon Saginahor, not that the heavenly king overrode the lower king, but it really hints to him saying that the lower king, the earthly king, of Achashverosh, overrode the heavenly king. This is a nice way, and it's not polite to say that someone overrode Hashem's will, so the way the Gemara says it is opposite, but the intention, says Mefarshim, is that he said, uh-oh, Hashem wants the Jewish people to stay alive, and now the earthly king has made a gezerah with Haman's help that they should not, that there's a gezerah against them. So I saw this Gemara, found this very disturbing. What is that supposed to mean? How could Mordechai, of all people and anyone, say, uh-oh, the earthly king has overcome the heavenly king? What is that supposed to mean? So again, the Maharal, first, any reactions, thoughts?
I don't think it's a matter of fact about it.
This was his lakagadullah that the Gemara is trying to understand what he said, but it's still, it's very disturbing. So Maharal says that he thought Hashem would have or should have already intervened. He said this is not normal that a gezeira actually went out that decrees the destruction of the whole B'nai Yisrael. Hashem didn't judge him. Hashem didn't stop this. What's going on? And he saw something else unnatural. He saw that he knew Achashverosh, and we've gotten to know Achashverosh so far in this year, and he said, Achashverosh wouldn't do this. According to Maharal, he said, Achashverosh wouldn't decree genocide on the Jewish people. Something's off here. Something's not natural here. And because he saw something unnatural happening, he viewed that as perhaps Hashem's will, and Hashem didn't stop that from happening. So he was afraid, says Maharal, that maybe, Haman's real intention for the end of the game could actually happen. Which I still find disturbing, because I would think that Mordechai would have emunah and know, that all of Hashem's promises to the Jewish people, that he's not going to destroy us. So, according to Maharal, this unnatural turn of events made him start to really worry. And again, it makes me think of the other reflection we did about how he was kind of trying to play with the hashkacha that he saw in the world, where he didn't make any assumptions here. Sometimes, and we talked about this when we talked about it previously, but since we weren't here previously, and just to refresh our memories, one of the things we talked about is that nowadays there's a big trend, and everyone likes seeing Hashem in our lives, and Hashgacha Pratis, and this was meant to be, and whatever, and the danger of that is that sometimes we see Hashem where we think we know what Hashem is doing, and we think we know what Hashem is saying, and what do we know? We have no idea what Hashem is saying and planning. Even if it is Hashgacha Pratis, we don't know what it's for. We don't know what direction it's going to head in, and what it's supposed to do. I remember one particular instance in my life where I felt like I was seeing things that were unnatural, that were unusual happening. I was like, oh my gosh, Hashem is doing this. I thought it was a good thing. And then things ended up the opposite of what I wanted and what I hoped. And I was like, what happened? Where was it asking?
That's our interpretation.
Right, exactly. So first, when it happened to me, I was like, maybe there's no Hashgacha Pratis. Maybe I'm making it up. And then I thought about it deeper. I spoke with some friends and mentors, and I was like, no. It's not that it's not Hashgacha Pratis, it's just that we can't make any assumptions. When people claim they know why Hashem does things, or what's going to happen, or whatever, we have to be very, very cautious not to make assumptions. And even Mordechai was very, very cautious. That he, even though it's a big, big thing, of course Hashem's not going to destroy the Jewish people, he saw something weird, he was like, he was nervous. So this is, put us in our places a little bit, in how we view the world. Okay. So this is something about Mordechai.
Why is the language used that he allowed himself to be overridden? Meaning, it still should be Hashem's plan regardless. Why is it written?
Interesting. If you look at what the Gezeirah was from, the original Gemara was about the Gezeirah was it was a punishment either because they davened to Avodah Zarah in the times of Chanetzar or because they sinned in the feast, in the party. And Hashem never wants bad for the Jewish people. Hashem only wants good for us. And of course Hashem doesn't want us to sin. So if we go with the Gemara that it happens a punishment, then that means that Hashem's true will wasn't that this should have to happen. If there shouldn't have to happen, they shouldn't sin in the first place. But this overrode what Hashem really wanted and put us on a different track, in a different direction. That's how I would see it. Okay. So, we're gonna go back to the Midrash. The page in the Midrash that's set. We're going to go to the next phrase we said, again, we're still in Pasuk Aleph, and we see that Mordechai, he may have said certain words, as the Gemara says, but in addition to whatever words he said, he also had this Zakar Gedolah Marah. And, hold on a second, we'll go to the Midrash from it. Aleph. So the two words were on the last page, so I just saved the page to send out. And it's quoting the pasuk Zachag Zola Marah. And what does the Midrash have to say about this? Veichan Nifralo Peshushan Shneimar Veizak Zachag Zola Marah. Where else do we see this phrase? You have another Tanakh allusion over here. You know, and. Yitzchak Zaka? When did he Zaka? So almost Esav did the Zaka Gadol HaMara. When Yitzchak, it became apparent that Yitzchak gave the bracha to Yaakov. Okay, so we have the repayment of this in Shushan, where Mordechai gave out the same description of a big, loud, terrible cry. Amar Rabbi Chanin, and here we have the same phrase that we had before in the Midrash. Man's Amar Kud Shabrihu Vatranhu. It's Vatran Veim Ohi. You think Hashem doesn't repay people, doesn't hold people accountable? Your bell should be Mevatered. Ella, what's the Mevatir here? What's the Hashem holding someone accountable here? Mariach Ruch say the Gave Dile. Eventually says back to Dav. What do we think before we finish Midrash?
That we betrayed Esav?
So who's being repaid by Mordechai having to cry out? Sounds kind of strange. So what does Midrash say? Sharei Zakachat, he's Ik Yaakov le'Esav. Yaakov caused Esav, he's Ik, Opan, right? Yaakov caused Esav to cry out this big, loud cry. Who is the Midrash blaming?
Yaakov.
Yaakov is blamed here because he caused Esav to cry out a big loud cry. Therefore, his descendant, Mordechai, is going to be in this horrible situation with horrible Zera and have to cry out this loud cry. So also, sorry for the references, but we'll refresh your memories. In a previous class, we did the Midrash I mentioned where Haman, he feel poor, and all the Zodiacs, according to the Midrash, were kind of trying to defend B'nai Yisrael. And they were saying, there's some good association between B'nai Yisrael and me. Therefore, the poor can't land on me, on my zodiac time of the year. And in the end, not all of them had something to defend B'nai Yisrael for, and Haman's poor ended up going by the months and not by the zodiacs. So we learned that one of the zodiacs was Gedi. And the Midrash had said, does Gedi reflect positively on B'nai Yisrael? Because when Yaakov went in to trick Yitzchak to get the bracha, he was wearing the clothing of Gedi Izim, and this is a zechus. This is a zechus. So presumably, the zechus was, he was doing the right thing. Rivka had a nevuah, she knew it was the right thing that Yaakov was supposed to get the bracha, she told Yaakov to dress up, Yaakov did it, he got the right bracha, everything worked out in the end. So if that was a zechus, then what's this?
Why did she actually have to trick him?
This is a very good question.
That's exactly what the question is.
Meaning, why couldn't she have just said, Yitzchak, you're not supposed to give the bracha? That's a good question. That's on Rivka, though. Meaning, it's a good question, and it still leaves this question.
The reason is because of something on Yaakov, and then he was the one who caused the fact. Which, whatever. We also, at my shop at table, didn't have discussed this.
Right. It's a very good question.
Did she feel fear that she could in or that
she felt something
loved so much and he wouldn't have been able to see it?
Right.
Or the beautiful idea that he came up with is that maybe actually he loved Asa so much, she's like, you know what? Someone loves Asa so much, I don't want to take with that.
That's interesting.
That's going to be great parenting for him. But
interesting. It's a very good question. I haven't learned like one Perush that like spells it out really clearly. You can kind of, again, debate it, intuit it. You know, was there some problem in the relationship between Rivka and Yitzchak? Did she feel, was it for the benefit of, ultimately maybe, it was for the benefit of Yaakov, his personal midos, in being an individual who wasn't just Tamim, he was able to do trickery when necessary, which we know about later in his life with Lavan. It's a very good question. Again, here we're seeing Yaakov blame. So even if, whether you say Rivka was right or not, we still have some blame apparently being placed on Yaakov. So what did Yaakov do wrong? He was just following his mother's instructions, no? So what happens when somebody cries? What is the Zakah Gedola Mora? Let's look at our pasuk, okay? What is the pshat trying to tell us? Mordechai yadat, kol asher nasav, ikra Mordechai begadav, yobash sak v'ayikar, v'yitzei betochir, v'yizak Zakah Gedola Mora. What is this description describing? It's grief, right? Sak v'ayikar, it's grief. It's a deep, deep pain. The phrase Zakah Gedola Mora expresses a deep, inner, genuine pain. So with Yaakov and Esav, maybe Yaakov did the right thing. Apparently Yaakov did the right thing, right? But what happened? He caused Esav to cry out this Takah, apparently Takah is the same thing, Takah Gedola Mora. What he did, even if the action was correct, something about what he did or didn't do cause a very deep pain in Esav. And for that, he is blamed. For causing someone else deep pain, do we ever see him, like, apologizing to Esav? You know, later on, okay, Esav wants to kill him, so he had to work things out, you know, and then he goes and he sends a gift and he davens and he sets up his family and the whole thing. But, like, was he actually trying to make peace with Esav, or was he just trying to save his life and his family's life? Makes you think, right? Maybe a message we can get from here is that sometimes, even if someone's actions are correct or justified, we still have to be sensitive to individual. Whoever, if someone's suffering as a result, you still have to try to do things in such a way to minimize the pain that it's causing to someone else. Or maybe after the fact to do something to address and to acknowledge the pain that it caused someone else. And I think this is not unrelated to the beginning, the other nidras they were talking about with they sat down to eat and drink with the brothers and Yosef. Once again, it shows a certain insensitivity there. It's even more apparent where they did something. Was that?
A lot more apparent.
Yes.
Right?
In other words, even if you think you're justified, and even if you are justified, as is very clear here, you don't just sit down and make light of it. And this is exactly the problem that we saw last week with one of the commentaries about Haman and Ahasuerus sitting down to drink. That Maral said, what's that a gesture of? It's a gesture of indifference. It's a gesture of, now let's distract ourselves. Let's not focus on that bad thing that we just did that's really, really serious and it caused pain to a lot of people. Let's go and do our own thing and distract ourselves. So these two ends, you know, the spectrum, the idea of actively avoiding and distracting from pain that's caused someone else versus really thinking you're in the right, but being able to be sensitive and think about how it might affect someone else and being able to be sensitive to that. That is this midrash. So we have... What's that?
I think that Yaakov was sensitive.
When? At what point? You mean when he sent the gift? Interesting. I'm curious to hear why you think that. Oh, definitely. I'm very curious. Okay, great. Okay. Okay, so let's move on past Tafsiga. Avayavo ad l'fnei shar ha-melech, ki'in lo v'ha-melech, el shar ha-melech, blah, blah, blah. So the Mordechai came, and he didn't only went up to the shar ha-melech, he didn't go all the way, because it's not appropriate to come in his sackcloth. Everywhere in the kingdom, all the Jews were in terrible mourning. This mourning was in fasting, and the same Tzak Ve'efer, in words they said, it really affected everybody. So Esther is still in the palace. She's not out with the masses. She got word of what was going on in the streets. Of what was going on with Mordechai, or maybe what was going on with other Jews. Vatichalchal hamalkah me'od. It's very interesting where vatichalchal, it indicates some sort of distress. Vatishlach begadim lahalbish et Mordechai ulasir sako me'elav velo kibel. She sent clothing to Mordechai, to, you know, nicer clothing, and he put it instead of the sack vefer, and he didn't accept it. So what is this vatichalchal? The Gemara gives an interesting interpretation, which I had no idea why the Gemara would bother telling us. So let's see if we can figure it out. Okay, we're still on the same page as before, in Tevav 15:2, and it says, again, it's Machlokes, Amarav, Sheper Sanida. He says she suddenly began to menstruate. Rav Yirmiyah Amar Shehutzuchal Nikhazeha. That she her it has to do with her intestines, not her menstrual cycle, but that like in her intestines her bowel was loosened. That she had like a stomach issue as a result of hearing the news. Her narot told her what was going on, and she had this physical kind of reaction. Either she began to menstruate or she had stomach issues. And then the Gemara moves on to the next words. So I was like, what? Why is he going on with this? Who cares? Then it moves on. Okay. And it's kind of personal information. I don't know. It sounded kind of like... How does who?
How
does
it normally translate?
Oh, like, she was, like, kind of distressed. It has a physical connotation. The root of it is sometimes used to refer to women giving birth, in Navi, with a chet and a lamed. So it seems to have something to do with, like, that area of the body and some intense, painful movement or thing going on. Actually, we can skip the Midrash. I think I thought it was so many pages, but I did copy it also. Midrash Rabbah says, actually, she miscarried. That she was pregnant. That she was pregnant and she miscarried. And so much so, which page is it on? Yeah, it's the page that says...
All of those reactions are understandable.
Right, Ration and Aleph, it says in the corner of the Midrash page, that she miscarried, and here I'll tell you inside... Misha, not only did she miscarry, Misha Ashahi Pila Shuv Lo Yalda. That affected her so strongly that she wasn't able to give birth after that. Which is machlokes, because many people are familiar with the idea that Daryavesh was her son, and he was the one who gave permission to rebuild the base Midrash later. So it is machlokes, not so simple. But according to one opinion, in the Midrash, that's not the case. She didn't have any children. And this is why. So I copied a page for you. In English, from Rabbi Weinbach, that I think gives us a little more insight into what the point of this Gemara is and what we can learn from it. It's the one that's in English in the source, in the, you know, what I sent out. He says, Esther was terribly upset by the news of Mordechai's outcry and his appearance at the king's gate in sackcloth and ashes. Her reaction to this sign of trouble for her people was so intense that she virtually melted inside, causing a physiological eruption of either menstruation or acute abdominal stress. Despite her presence in the security and comfort of the king's palace and her long separation from the Jewish community, she had lost none of her identification with and compassion for her people. The sudden realization that her position might make her responsible for the rescue shocked her to the point he's even taking the next step, that suddenly she's starting to think about her role in all this, and that was very shocking and also affected her to the point where she momentarily lost control of her bodily functions, or maybe miscarried according to the Midrash. So he's saying, what do we see from her? She could have not been affected by this. She could have just, like, maybe she could have worried a little bit, but she could have felt disconnected. She was in the palace, and she was doing her own thing, and she had to hear about it. I guess she didn't have news on her WhatsApp, you know, to like get every piece of information as it was unfolding. But she heard, she got word of this, and she felt so strongly connected to her people that it didn't matter if she thought she was safe from it. Well, that can't happen to me. I'm the queen in the house. But she felt such a strong connection that actually physically affected her. And what that made me think of is that sometimes, especially women, are physically affected by things. By news, we're physically upset. Sometimes, you know, we read these horrible things that go on in the world, and they distress us, and we cry, or we, like, get the shakes, or we get sort of, like, women especially sometimes get a physical reaction to things. And on one hand, the Western world might say that's weakly, you know, that's like a weakness of a thing to be so affected by things. On the other hand, what's the point of the Gemara telling us this? It's not some. I think, based on the Gemara and this piece for Weinbach, I think it shows godless. It's a great thing for a woman and for anybody to be so deeply connected to each other, Jews, to an individual, that it actually affects us to that degree. And this is a godless that we shouldn't feel bad about. Sometimes we might feel like silly, you know, to cry over something, or like women overreact to things, or whatever it is, but I think it shows us nothing to be embarrassed for, and Lahavdil, it's actually a godless that we should, can't really strive for having a physical reaction to things, but strive to have that level of connection and love for Am Yisrael and for people and for good causes, etc., that it affects someone so deeply.
And I think the second thing that Rav Weinbach said is very interesting, that she didn't see herself as one who could, like, bring forth the redemption, which is very symbolic of not being able to give birth, which I also think adds so much more to the, when she does decide to do something about it. Like, now we see just how she really thought, like, she couldn't be the one to do it. She even miscarries.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, when she feels like this is her mission or whatever, she just says it's a 180. You know?
So Dafka, what's happened with Shot? Right after that pasuk, where she's having this reaction, and she starts doing things. She doesn't sit there and stay in her state of, like, pain or problems or whatever. I'm sure she tended to herself, you know, but the Pesukim don't, like, busy themselves with describing that further. We don't hear about that being where Esther's response stayed. Lehatach, exactly like you said, first she sends clothes to Mordechai, then Pesukim, but to cry Esther Lehatach, Misar Seamach, Sharmi Lefaneh. She called the servant of the king, Hatach, but to Tzavei or Mordechai, he says, go to Mordechai, Ladat Mazel Val Mazel. Apparently she didn't know the whole story. She knew something, she knew enough that it bothered her, but she's like, what's going on? Tell me more. Go find out information for me. We have to do something here.
It also shows the transition from personal loss, and then later it's a national loss.
Mm.
She didn't even care about that. She was just focused on the national.
Mm-hmm. This is a very personal thing. Her bodily goings on, especially, again, if it relates to having
future.
Children.
Her personal future, but she thought the nation's future was what trumped it.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. This is a very strong amoeba all of a sudden that we're seeing in Esther in both parts of the reaction. Not only the first part, not only the second part, but Zaska, the two of them together.
Yeah.
Feeling that pain, being affected by it, and then moving past her own pain and moving forward and jumping into action to do something about it and to find out more. Again, she didn't know quite yet what it was yet that she had to do, because apparently she needed more information, but already she's trying to talk to people and get things moving. What? That's the look on your face. Frowning. Yeah. Okay. So what's with Hatach? What is she asking Hatach to do exactly? The Gemara says that Hatach may have been Daniel, which is an interesting point. And there's machlokes in different mafarshim who this Hatach was. This I didn't bring all of them in the sources, but just the Gemara in that same page gives two different perspectives on his name. It says, Vatikra Esther Hatach, Amar Rav Hatach the Daniel. The lamin ekrash mahatach. So if he's Daniel, it's called Daniel. We know that name from Tanakh. Why is he called Hatach? Shechatachuhu migduato. Because they cut him down from his greatness. He had a very high, important position under leadership of Bavel in the palace, and now under Achashverosh, he was cut down to a lower level. He was still Misar Sehamelach. He was still somewhere in the palace, but apparently he was not as important of a position. Shmuel Amar Shekol Zevrei Malchu Nechsachin Alpi. Shmuel is a very different side. That it's Milashon Lechatoch. To cut, but not that he was cut down, but rather he kind of cut out, he meted out the king's rules. Apparently not this Gezerah, but whatever the king said, he was like, had an important role in passing that along to the people, through his word. And that sounds very important actually. And, one of the Midrashim says that Hatach was really the most trusted of all of the servants. And that's why this opinion of the Gemara says that he was able to relay the words of the king, because they were trusted that he would say it correctly and accurately and faithfully. And actually, the same Gemara says in the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer that Haman noticed this back and forth. Esther sent him to Mordechai, Mordechai sends Esther, and he was like, what's going on between the two of them? He started to get suspicious, and that Haman actually killed Hatach, or Daniel, because of this suspicion. But after that, there was no one as trustworthy that Esther could find to do this job. One of the other opinions of Malbim that says, he says that, that Hatach actually wasn't Daniel. He was actually a regular officer of the king, but Esther trusted him. Esther knew him and trusted him and saw him. Why did she trust him? Not because he was Daniel, but because he was, had this important job of Nefesh and Alpiv that he relayed the king's words. So she's like, oh, okay. She like first identified who he was and that, who, based on how she knew him and his position, that he was trustworthy, and then she sent him out to Mordechai, but she was she's plotting things. Once again, right after she had this distracting, you know, personal experience, now she's not only doing things to find formation, according to this, she's actually being very strategic and thinking about what to do. She was worried, says the Malbim, that Mordechai would see this king, this messenger of the king, trying to get information out of him, and he didn't trust Ahasuerus anymore, or, you know, so why is he going to speak to Ahasuerus' officer about things? Maybe he's going to be suspicious of the king. He's trying to stop him from communicating with Esther, like, maybe he can't trust that it was really sent from Esther. Esther was concerned about that. So Esther sent Hathach and told him to be kind of tricky and to be subtle and to find out more information from Mordechai, not in a direct way, whereas if it was Daniel, it was because he was the only person she could trust, because he was Jewish, and if there's this big news that has to do with the Jews, and the Jews are upset about it, and Mordechai's upset about it, well, you can only trust another Jew to relate accurately. Whereas, according to this opinion, if he wasn't Jewish, she knew Mordechai wouldn't trust him, and she was concerned about it, so she worked it out with him that he should kind of be subtle and kind of sneaky to figure out the information without Mordechai getting worried and refusing to tell the information. Which is two different, very different pictures, but either way it tells us the strategy and the subtlety of how Esther was working, and how, once again, before, and it's very striking, before we talked about how the Lashon of her being taken to the king's palace after the contest is very passive, Tilakach Esther, and she didn't seem to speak up for herself or do anything, and not only is she doing things right away after she gets word of it and has the reaction, but she's really strategizing and thinking ahead to plan what's the best way to do this. Before there's even, she doesn't even know what she's going to have to do. She's just trying to find information. But already she's thinking carefully about it. Okay. So we have Hatah. And then there's this last little part of that same page in the Gemara. The last phrase in this pasuk. L'dat mazeh, v'al mazeh. Says the Gemara, Am Rabbi Yitzchak, shal chalo, shema avru Yisrael, al chamish achum shei Torah. Dichtiv bahen, mizeh u'mizeh hen k'tuvim. I should have asked you. Where do we know this verse from? Once again, we have our Tanakh word association. Okay? What is this phrase? Mazeh v'al mazeh. If you weren't paying attention tomorrow, or if you didn't know what the reference was, where does it say that? The Gemara is saying, it's not Psalm, this wording in the Pasuk, it's an allusion. And I sent you the Pasuk, from, I sent you also Zakah Gedolah, and so you're curious, from Todos, and then in Kitita, we have the Luchos. And pasuk in Paraklan of that pasuk Tevav, it says Vayifen Vayirid Moshe Minahar Ushne Luchot Ha'edu Biado Luchot Ktuvim Mishne Evrehem Mizeh Umizehim Ktuvim. We see about the Luchos that they were written. There's an expression often said that it was Charus Al Luchos, that the 10 Dibros were engraved on the Luchos from here and from here. They were written, and the Mepharshim say that what does it mean that it was engraved from here and from here? That it was written, if you looked at it from this side, it was written on that side, if you looked from the other side, it also said the same divorce, you could read it from the other side too. So this is a phrase that describes the Torah. So says the Gemara, why is the Pasuk using this terminology? Because it has to do with what Esther had in mind when she was sending a message to Mordechai. She said she was concerned, and she said, if there's such a big deal, and something's happening, then it must be, the only way it could be is because of the nature of Ru Al Chamisha Chumshei Torah. They must have done Averas. They must have been over this Torah, which is termed Mizam Mizam Ksuvin, and so that must be why this happened. And so that's the hint. That's how she went about her communication with Mordechai. Also, where is this coming from? What is the Gemara trying to tell us? Why, this is like a random description of the Torah to me. If I'm reading the Pshat and I'm reading the Gemara, I'm like, oh, okay, it's referring to the Torah. So she was trying to say they must have, you know, been over on the Torah. Like, who knows the description of the Torah? There are much more, you know, clear, obvious descriptions of the Torah that it could have used. If it was really just trying to tell us, maybe they transgressed the Torah. So what is the Gemara trying to tell us over here? The disillusion with the terminology. Maral helps us out once again. And he says, this Mizeh Mizeh, what does it really mean about the Torah? It indicates a certain aspect of the Torah to us. Any description of something, when there's multiple descriptions, different descriptions, you know, indicate different aspects of the thing. He says, the Torah, the Luchos, were engraved, and he says that the fact that it was engraved on both sides means that when there was a letter, like a Samech, that's closed, it technically wasn't attached at all to the stone, to the Luchos. It was engraved, went all the way through. Anyway, it's a miracle because it would be, you know, mirror image. That's a different issue from one side to the other side. But putting that aside for a minute, the fact that it was engraved on this side and that side means they met in the middle. It means that the words weren't really in the stones, they were through the stones. Which means it was totally miraculous that there were any words at all, because the stones, the middle pieces would have fallen out, right? And it wouldn't be a coherent phrase. It wasn't a test. It would be straight through. So says Maharal, this is symbolic of a certain aspect of the Torah. He says, the Torah itself is detached, so to speak, in this way. Just as when it's cut all the way through, the words are not really part of the stones anymore. When there's like high relief engravements or sculptures, and it's part of the piece of stone, but something that goes all the way through, it's not part of it anymore. He says the Torah is not part of things. It's not part of the Gashmi world. The rock represents Gashmius, and the engravement straight through represents the Nivdal. It represents the Seichel and the conceptual, spiritual world of the Torah. And the Torah itself, whereas it talks about Gashmi things, it talks about mitzvot that involve things that we can move in our bodies and all sorts of things in this world, the Torah itself is not really attached. It's in its own world, it's in its own category, it's something from Shemayim that is purely spiritual. So what does that have to do with our story here? So he says it's the totality aspect of it. According to Maharal, the Torah is an extreme of a thing. It's totality of spirituality. It's complete nivdal, complete detachment from this world. And Esther, according to this, she did know what the nature of the gezeirah was. She said, if there's a gezeirah to destroy Bnei Yisrael in their totality, completely, what a crazy thing. Just like Mordechai was like, what? That's not normal. Officers are not going to decree genocide. Such an extreme kind of gezeirah. She said the only way that such a gezeirah could have been signed and sent out is if they were over something that's an extreme kind of thing, which is the Torah itself. And they must have, and in that, he says, she wanted to see what could be done, and in that way, she was trying to work out how she could save them. Maybe she, and this is what we're going to see afterwards, how she tries to bring them to tshuva. She says, go fast, right? Go daven, go do mitzvahs, go do tshuva, essentially, so to counteract what must have happened, and you must have been over on the Torah, on this extreme thing of the Torah. So I was thinking to take it one more step. The points that fit together after reading this Maharal is, to me, the logical next step is, what about that nivdal aspect of the Torah specifically, though? Maharal says, it's an extreme. The Torah is an extreme, the Gezeirah is an extreme, put the two together, that's what it must be, says Esther. But I think we can see evidence of the specific connection of the nature of the Torah in this way. The Torah is not a Gashmi thing, it's not connected to Gashmi. Why did the Bnei Yisrael deserve this Gezeirah, according to the Gemara? Okay, exactly. They were too connected to Gashmi. Either, even the most spiritual idea of God was a physical thing, was the idol in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, or they totally indulged themselves in the gashmius of the party, that they detached themselves from the detachment, that they threw themselves into the rock part, into the gashmi things, and they missed that. They missed that totality of Torah they were supposed to stay connected to, and they got too connected to the physicality, and so the hint to it is this idea of what Torah was supposed to be to them and to us, and what we have to remember about Torah, that we can, even if you're living, it's kind of like we said almost about, like, you're doing the right thing, but and it's justified, but you still have the machshiv, you know, the other person's feelings, benazim l'chavero, also benazim l'makom, you could be doing all the right things, and crossing your D's and dotting your I's, and following halacha to the letter, but what's going on really? What is the value system? Baruch Hashem, we live in a time when a lot of Jews in a lot of places in the world have a lot of money, and we're able to have comfort in the Gashmius, which is very, very nice and very helpful and very wonderful, much better than suffering that happened in previous generations. And yet, it's very careful that we don't end up attaching ourselves to the Gashmius. We have to be that Charus al Ruchos, that Zem Nizah. We have to make sure that we keep that connection to the detached, to the Nizah, to the spiritual aspect of the Torah. Okay, so this is the idea here about the Torah. We'll wrap up with just the last part. Oh, one other idea is the Midrash adds in a pasuk. With the Zal Zah, it says that there's another reference to Zah, which is not exactly like the Chumash where it's two Zahs, but just one Zah, which is the Zeh Kelivan Vehu, that they forgot the Zeh of Zeh Kelivan Vehu, which is not the Torah itself, but rather Hashem himself. That they forgot that they're not only supposed to be connected with mitzvahs, but this is broadening our picture even more. Not only should we be careful that in our following all the halachas and all the right technicalities and remember the value system of the spirituality, not the physicality, but the real goal of it all is Hashem himself. That the point is, we want to connect ourselves to Hashem. And sometimes we could get osik bi, all the things that we're busy doing, and not bring Hashem into the experience. And we have to make sure to be cognizant of that and ultimately, you know, build a connection to Hashem himself. We'll just finish this little section of the parak with the pshat. So, Vayitzeh Hatzach al Mordechai al Rechov Ha'ir, Asher Lefnei Shah HaMelech. So he goes out to Mordechai, Vayeged lo Mordechai et Kol Asher Karahu. Mordechai told him that Parsha Lekesev Asher Amar Haman Lishko Agin Zeh HaMelech by Yehudim Labdam. He tells them about the money that was paid to destroy Bnei Yisrael. That Patregen Kitav Hadat Asher Nitan Deshusha Mashmidam Natan lo Lar'od et Esther Ulagid la Ulatzavod ala Lavo El HaMelech Ulichanin lo Ulvakesh Mofanav El Alama. So here, Mordechai is trying to call the shots, and he's starting to guide things. He has a strategy in mind. He has, with his sensitivity towards Hashgach HaPratis, he's like, well, this is obvious. Haman's in the palace. Haman and Mordechai are making this gezeira. What has to happen? Go tell her. And litzavod aleh, it's a strong lashon. He says, Hatzaf, go command Esther. Esther's the queen. Shouldn't she be commanding people? Earlier on, again, we saw that she was kind of taking his lead, and he was guiding her and everyone. And so he still has that same role here, even though she knew right away she has to find out more information, making communication, he's still the leading figure. He's giving a command, lavo al hamelech, and it's a big command. She has to go to the king, uvichanemlo, she has to plead with him, and ask of him, and he's saying, Esther, you gotta do this. Go and do this. And so we have, although Esther's starting to think in her mind, what's strategic, how do I find out more information, Mordechai is still telling her really what she should do. So we have Bohatzak Ve'agel Esther at Zivrei Mordechai. So he told her, we'll just finish with one more pasuk because, again, there's these two sides of it. On one hand, Mordechai is commanding her, but then right after, Vatoder Esther Lohatzak Vatitzaveihu El Mordechai. Suddenly Esther is commanding Mordechai back, which totally isn't in character that we had seen until now. Doesn't mean she's not going to listen to him, and, you know, obviously we'll see how it plays out, but I think it's interesting how that lashon is used for both of them. I'm sure they did it nicely, but, but already we see that he's still calling the shots, but she's also starting to get the wheels oiled and to respond to him. Okay, so we'll stop over there, and we'll continue there. So then that's an S plus to get all of.
Sorry.
I mean, we could, yeah. Good. Okay. 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 Sure.